So first of all, I want to thank you all for your warm welcome. It's very wonderful to be back and to see you all. And I also want to thank Indrajumna Maharaj for always, somehow or other, I don't know why, but Maharaj is always kind to me. That sort of leaves me feeling very unworthy, but at the same time, grateful and encouraged. So when we speak of science and knowledge, then naturally our understanding may be based on a conditioned understanding of what science is. Science, what has been developed in universities, and what has gradually become very predominant in the modern world because of its applications of technology and so many machines which have entered into every sphere of our life. Therefore, although we may not know that much about science, we are certainly our lives are very much interwoven with the fruits of that science, and our whole lifestyle is dependent on it. Cars, phones, and so on, and so on, and so on. Yet, when a Vaishnava speaks of science, then we cannot really speak of that particular definition of science, because that we would define as nescience, as really not science at all. Our Suhota Maharaj, who was very scholarly and even beyond the scriptures. First of all, he was very learned in scriptures, but he was also very conversant with Western philosophers and also principles of science. And he once quoted from a a philosopher of science named Karl Popper, who said that if it is true that science is trying to establish the truth, then we found so far that whatever that was established turned out not to be the case, because whatever theory was established was overthrown by another one, and so on, and therefore each time, so far, not yet hit the target, not yet uncovered the truth. So, therefore, from a spiritual perspective, what is known in the world as science is known by us as nescience. And true science is only available to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and those who are connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dharmam tu saksat bhagavat pranitam. Real transcendental knowledge begins, or real knowledge comes from Krishna. Krishna is unlimited, and his energies are unlimited. Parasya shakti vividaiva shuyate. So, Krishna's energies are manifesting in so many ways, and it is not possible for one of who is limited to capture the unlimited. Therefore, fundamentally, we cannot understand the totality of what is. It's not possible. We are very limited. We all have limited intelligence, limited senses, limited perception. So it is not possible to ever understand the unlimited in that way. In the Brahma Samhita, there's also a verse which describes that pantastu koti satavatsara sampragamyam Vayora tapi manaso muni pumbhavana supyasti yat prapavichinti abhichintya tattva govindam adipurusha tamam bhajami. One cannot, by dint of some yogic process, by drilling the respiration, or by dint of philosophical reasoning, understand the absolute truth. In that way, one cannot even touch the tip of the toe of the Lord. Ultimately, therefore, knowledge is given to us by the Supreme Lord. It is mercy comes into place. Without mercy, there is no knowledge and there is no science. And Srila Prabhupada is explaining to us that when we are traveling and we see a landscape, that when we see a mountain from a distance, it just looks like one sort of grayish, greenish shape, and that's all we see. But when we get closer, then we begin to see with more distinction. We begin to see trees, rocks, so many varieties, streams of water, lake, you name it, little houses. Then we can see a lot of variety. So he says, in the same way, in the beginning, when we look at spiritual life, we cannot exactly figure it out. We cannot figure out what is the truth. I remember I would go and to different lectures, and sometimes I would hear the Sufis, and the next day I would hear a lecture on Buddhist philosophy, and it was all the same in my mind. It was all different revelations of the same spiritual truth. So, in the beginning, when one is approaching spirituality, one may see the underlying spiritual nature of everything, but more one cannot see. It's not possible. Only through mercy can we understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We find in Srimad Bhagavatam that we find a description of Advaya Jnana, of the undivided absolute truth, which then consists of three aspects: Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavatam, Bhagavan, iti sabjate. This undivided truth, this Advaya Jnana, is describing reality in full. Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman. Then we are really understanding things as they are. Then we have come to science, Advaya Jnana. So we hear everything. That Advaya Jnana is explaining that Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the origin of everything. And then it explains our position, how we are chitkana, how we are tiny parts and parcels of the energy of the Supreme Lord, but separated parts and parcels. Mamaivamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. And ultimately, that as long as we are in material existence, that we struggle, prakriti stani kersati, that we struggle with the material energy, because inherently the material energy is different from the soul, and the soul doesn't mix very well with the material energy. So therefore Bhagavad Gita says dukariyam asasvatam. The situation in the material world, all relationships are temporary and therefore always bringing us suffering. One can say that there is happiness and distress in the material world. But when that happiness is also temporary, then it also turns into distress. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita says, dukarayam, ultimately, it is distress. We'll end up with distress. So, therefore, Bhagavad Gita points out that the essence is to invest in our relationship with Krishna. And that is the real thing. Maya Shakta Manaparta Yoga Union Mad Asraya Asansiyan Samagramam Yatakyatya Asitat Srinu. One should hear about Krishna and develop attachment to Krishna. And beginning of the seventh chapter. And then in the next verse it says, Gyanantam Savigyanam Idam Vakshami Asesata. If we know that, then if we understand that attachment to Krishna is really the essence of life, then there's nothing else to be known. Then we know everything about this material world, and we know everything about the spiritual world. So then one can speak of real knowledge. Therefore, truly, real science is found in Bhagavad Gita. Having said all this, I have only established the first level, the theoretical level, the philosophical level, which is very important. It is the foundation of our outlook in life. But yet, it's not enough, because only the philosophical level is not sufficient unless we develop true attachment to Krishna, true appreciation for Krishna, a truly loving relationship with Krishna. It will not be enough to understand the order of things and how everything is coming from Krishna, how everything is related to Krishna, how everything is meant for Krishna. That's very nice. It is very rare in this world to have that understanding, but it's not enough. Because it will not save us. It will not save us from fear. Bayam dvitya binivesita syat. It is said, as soon as we are separated from Krishna, there is fear. This fear is very deep in us. It is said also in scripture, shutim itare smritim itare bhartam anye bhajanta bhava bita. Aham iam nanda vande yasya param brahma, which says that most people, they are following either the Shruti or the Smriti or the Mahabharat, and based on these scriptures they worship me all, and they all do so out of fear, actually. Out of fear for suffering, out of fear for death. Out of fear we turn to shelter. Out of fear we take up, we take to transcendental knowledge. So it is stated. But aham iham nanda vande, I am worshipping Nanda Maharaj, because in the courtyard of his house, the Param Brahma, the Absolute Truth, is playing like a child. So, this verse is found in the Chaitanya Charitamrita from Raghupati Upadhyaya, who is, who was a godbrother of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's spiritual master. And a very significant verse, really the verse that is making all the difference between theoretical understanding and real understanding. The real understanding where we realize that our true relationship is the relationship with Krishna and nothing else. No other relationship really exists. Not even the relationship with our body. It doesn't really exist, because only for a short time do we have this relationship, and then it all disintegrates and is no more and has no more meaning. On the entire existence of the soul, what meaning does the body really have? But that is philosophy. Emotionally, it's not so easy then to realize that understanding. We understand from Bhagavad Gita that true knowledge is not about philosophical understanding, but about realizing it in the heart. Not gyan, but vigyan is what we are looking for. That is true science. So we're speaking here about different degrees of science. And as I said, the first phase was the theoretical level, but we now wish to go to that level of thoroughly realizing. It is said that the Bhagavatam is heard and sung by men who are sadhava, who are thoroughly honest. Tatvak visargo janatak viklavo yasmin pratislogo abadavti apinamani anantasya sankitaniyat shivanti grinanti kayanti sadhava. Heard and sung by men who are thoroughly honest. So, who thoroughly live in the absolute truth, more and more, who deeper and deeper realize this philosophy day by day, who more and more really understand Vasudev Sarvam Iti, that Krishna is everything and nothing else really matters. And everything else is simply how much can we connect it with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada was walking along the Pacific Ocean, and at one point he asked the question, why is the Pacific Ocean so peaceful? And it was one of those questions he would sometimes ask that totally bewildered everyone's mind. It's like, why is the ocean, Pacific Ocean, so peaceful? I mean, and then Prabhupada said, because it's very deep. It's very deep. So ultimately, that is the essence. We must become very deep. Deep in our faith. Chaitanya Charitamrita is explaining. It is saying that one is classified as a kanistam, madhyam, or uttam, adhikari, Shraddha Anusari, according to the faith that one is adhering to. According to one's faith, one belongs in the either neophyte states, the intermediate states, or in the topmost states, according to one's faith. So this faith has to become deeper and deeper. Sometimes that faith is depicted like a tree with many roots, or reasons why we believe in Krishna. We have to have reasons. For example, why would we believe that the deities are more than stone? Why? One can say, well, scripture. Okay, that's one reason. But one can also say, we see that those who worship the deities for a long period of time become very exalted saintly personalities. That argument is for me very strong. When I see the pujaris in Mayapur, then I think, yes, okay, yes, the deities are definitely more than stone. More than stone. Definitely transcendental. But we need to find 1,000 reasons to convince ourselves thoroughly to destroy the final little threads of doubt that may be there in our heart. The traces of nescience. Doubt is something very, very deeply ingrained in us. It is said that there are different causes for doubt. One cause is sinful activity. Due to sinful activity, naham prakasa sarvasa yogamaya samavritaha, Krishna covers himself. And when Krishna covers himself, naturally doubt will arise, and the result will be is that we become insecure, and immediately we are not sure, is Krishna really the Supreme Lord? Is there really no enjoyment in the material world? Are we really going to write off the entire material world as meaningless, ultimately? The only meaning it has is when we are engaging it in the service of Krishna. Otherwise, it has no meaning. Are we ready? When you finish, you let me know. No problem. Too bad. Yeah. So I'm thinking about these things. Our faith may grow in time, and Krishna makes endless arrangements to increase our faith. We saw in Bhagavatam, we see the description of Maharaj Chitaketu, and Maharaj Chitaketu was that king who couldn't have a son. He tried so much, he had various queens, still not a son, and somehow or other, no offspring. But then he got, one day Narada came and gave him a benediction. He said, I can give you a benediction that you can have a son, but this son will give you both pleasure and pain. Are you willing to accept that blessing? So the king said, well, every son will give you pleasure and pain, so yes, I'll take him. But then the son was born, and it was such a wonderful occasion, such a celebration. But as I said, the king had many queens, and some of the queens who never gave the king a son, those queens were very, very upset because they felt, now we are out of favor. Now that queen who got the son will have the favor of the king. And in the end, some queens got that envious that they poisoned the child, and the child died. So then it was like lamentation, both happiness and distress, and the king totally distressed. But then Narada Muni returned, and then, okay, now we need the backup mic, I think. There was a system, I heard. Anyway, for now I'll speak louder until something happens for backup and come and bring it to a conclusion. The king... Please don't laugh, because it's already difficult to concentrate. The king was greatly distressed, but Narada returned, and Narada said that he called that son back. Okay.
Say that.
He called the son. Okay. Can someone fix the microphone?
He called that son
and brought him back to life. And then the dead son had returned and was told, your parents have called you back. He said, parents, which parents? I've had so many parents in so many lives. At that point, Maharaj Tritaketu became very detached. It cut all his material attachments, and he became, after that, a very exalted devotee. But still, by some arrangement of Krishna, he became cursed, and later on had to appear in the body of Ritasura, a very large and powerful demon. And it is said that was for further purification. So this purification continues and becomes more and more refined, so that our faith becomes very, very thorough. There really is nothing in this world, nothing, absolutely nothing, nothing of significance. And Krishna is really the only thing that is significant. It's very interesting that Nimai Pandit was such a scholar. Nimai Pandit was extraordinary, because Nimai Pandit, he could defeat anyone with arguments, and then he would defeat the arguments with whom he defeated everyone else, and then he would defeat those arguments as well. So by then, his audience was just totally, totally flabbergasted. But then one day, I forgot to say, Nimai, as a result, was very proud, very arrogant, and he would walk around in Navadvip as the pride personified. But one day, a very great and powerful scholar came from Kashmir. At that time, all the pandits of Navadvip, they quickly left, and they left Nimai to debate with him, because they thought, Nimai is very expert, he might defeat this pandit. In that case, we'll become very famous. But if he loses, then we'll say, well, he was only a boy. So it was a good, intelligent strategy. And when the Keshava Kashmiri Pandit came, at that time, Nimai, for the first time, took a very humble position. Unusual, actually, for his usual demeanor. Could you not shine that thing on me? That would be really good. His normal demeanor was not humble at all, but this time he was very humble. He was saying, I actually am only a beginning scholar of Sanskrit grammar, and I would be so pleased to hear from you. Then the Keshava Kashmiri Pandit asked him, what would you like to hear? Said, I heard you are very expert in poetry. I would like to hear some glorification of the Ganga. And the Keshava Kashmiri Pandit, then he established this whole poem of many, many verses glorifying the Ganga in fluent Sanskrit. And then Nimai pointed out the faults. The Kashmiri Pandit said, he pointed out the faults in the 64th verse. He said, how could you possibly remember? This is incredible. But somehow or other, anyway, Nimai said, some are great poets and others, they are Srutidhar, they have a great memory. So in the end, the Keshava Kashmiri Pandit was defeated, and to make the story, to bring it to its conclusion, the Nimai Pandit, after defeating that Keshava Kashmiri Pandit, Basically, very shortly after, Nehemiah went to Gaya. And in Gaya, he met his spiritual master, Ishwarapuri. And he came back as a humble Vaishnava. And when he came back as a humble Vaishnava, he started, it was a total change. And no one could believe it. Is that the same Nehemiah Pandit? Now he is serving everyone. And Nehemiah was just serving all the Vaishnavas. And then he began to again teach his Sanskrit grammar. And this time, he began to explain the roots of every word, of every Sanskrit word. And he just bent the grammar in this way and that way. And the conclusion was that every word is actually Krishna. The root of everything is really Krishna. The root of every word is Krishna. And he proved it. And he asked, is there anyone who can say that I'm saying anything wrong? And everyone said, no. What you're saying is completely right. But at the same time, we don't know how to use it. Because every word is Krishna. But that is the true vision. The true vision is not only that every word is Krishna, the root of everything is Krishna. And that is really Krishna consciousness. So currently, we are at a stage of developing our Krishna consciousness. And with that, coming to the stage of knowledge and leaving nescience behind, step by step, little by little. And we're falling short in knowledge. We're falling short in realized knowledge, where we actually develop attachment and love for Krishna. So, as we are falling short, all we have now is a prayer. Is a prayer. A prayer for mercy. That, in spite of my ignorance, in spite of my foolishness, to remain stubbornly attached to this material world, which is nescience, in spite of not being able to fully dedicate all my energy to you in service, I'm praying for mercy. Although I'm not deserving such mercy, I'm praying for mercy. Because it's ultimately that mercy that will make up the difference. It is that mercy. We were just before this lecture in the Junior March came, and we were discussing a little bit on a similar topic, and then Maharaj told me something, and I hope I'll get it right, otherwise I'm going to send the microphone over him because my memory is like a sieve. Right? But we were talking, and we were saying that ultimately we need the mercy of Krishna. But to get the mercy of Krishna, we need the mercy of Gauranga. And to get the mercy of Gauranga, we need to the mercy of Lord Nityananda. And to get the mercy of Lord Nityananda, we have to preach to Jagai and Madai. Was that right? Okay. We need the mercy at the end. Knowledge, we'll always fall short in knowledge. We'll always fall short in fully appreciating Krishna. We always fall short in love of Krishna, no matter how much it's growing. We're just feeling every time I'm falling short and time is running out. And I'm remembering how Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers were visiting us in the Krishna Balaram Mandir. And I remember the last time that Bhakti Vaibhav Puri Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, came to our temple on Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day, and how he was 93 years old at the time. And physically, materially speaking, not in a good condition. There were four brahmacharis that sort of carried him along from the car to the Vyasasan and then dropped him on the Vyasasan. God, it was like a poof, a sort of a crash landing, and just seeing that was already like, oh my God, you know, 93, right? What a condition. And then Maharaj said, so, I should speak? He said, yeah. Punch minute, they said, right? So then he began to speak. Oh, okay. Punch minute, 5 minutes. And then Maharaj spoke in a very simple way. Now, I heard him speak over many years on Prabhupada's disappearance day in Vrindavan. And in the earlier years, he used to tell pastimes about Prabhupada's life in exchange with Prabhupada. But then this last time, not. The last time was very simple. What he said, Swamiji turned all of you into Vaishnavas. He made all of you Vaishnavas. So, he said, Vaishnavas are very potent. He says, because Vaishnavas can give blessings. Therefore, I beg you all to please bless me. And that was it. That was the end of his talk. That was all he said. And then they carried him away, and that was the last time he ever came. And it really impressed me, because I was thinking, yes, at the end, you realize that everything you've done falls short. That it falls short. And at the end, you realize, I need all the blessings I can get. Because all the Vaishnavas have credit with Krishna. And therefore, I need their blessings. Krishna may hear their prayer. So in this way, with our shortfall, we realize shortfall in knowledge, in love for Krishna, we realize that we need all the mercy and all the blessings that we can get to make this life successful and go back to Godhead at the end. Okay, that's my understanding of science and knowledge. I hope that was a little bit useful. I can't read your questions. I don't have a light. I can't answer all the questions, I think. It's too many.
Do you want the light on?
Yeah. Thank you very much. How much should we rely on material science, knowing that it's actually nescience? Yeah, that's a good question. It's really nice when you sit here and you give the talk, but when you're really sick, then where do you go? Then suddenly you go to the hospital, and so on. So how much should we rely on material science? And spiritual knowledge as real knowledge. But ultimately we see that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't want anything but just kirtan and nothing else. No Western science, nothing. No medical science, just the holy name.
And the next one is, I've read that Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said that ultimately all modern technology, material science is for the Vaishnavas to preach Krishna consciousness. Yes, that is true, he said. That only devotees should use planes and cars and no one else. And I support that very much. Very good. What sort of person am I if I need some sign from God to affirm my faith in the Lord? It's not that we need one sign from God, we need a million signs of God, again and again, and still our faith is not so strong. In spite of everything, in spite of getting so much mercy of so many Vaishnavas, still our faith, still we're shaking. We're still not on solid ground. But anyway, therefore, we stick together. Please, yeah, you can take the thing. Together we're stronger. We're stronger. So, what can I say? I also realize very much that I'm very dependent on this movement. There's no question that without this movement, I could be Krishna conscious. And I remember how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta once thanked the audience, you know, and said, thank you very much for giving me an opportunity to speak, because that keeps me, saves me from Maya. That keeps me in Krishna consciousness. So in the same way, I thank you very much that you gave me the opportunity to speak. I thank Indrajumna Maharaj for being here. All throughout, I felt completely embarrassed, Maharaj, every moment. I mean, like, thinking, what am I doing here? Sitting here, fool that I am, arrogant, proud. But still, I did it. I sat down, gave a big talk, although I should have just refused and be quiet. But what to do? Anyway, I've tried to be faithful in this talk, right, to the parampara, and therefore Srila Rupa Goswami says something like that. He says that even when we repeat the words of the parampara, then even if it comes from the mouth of one who's not qualified, then still it cannot be contaminated. Something like that. We hope that some knowledge came through despite of all the lack of qualification. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Indrajumna Maharaj ki jai.